Today is Thursday, November 29th, 2018. We're going to hear Moshe Soloveitchik's share on Parshas Vayeshev and possibly Hanukkah.
I'd like to thank all of you for coming tonight. In case you don't know information, would you be so kind as to take your phones
and vibrate them,
or silence them, or shut them off? It would be very nice if you did. I'd like to welcome Harris back.
Thank you.
Nice to see you, Harris.
Nice to be seen.
I got my helpers back. I'd like to thank a very nice young man for coming early and helping me schlep everything in from the car. Kept me company for a couple of hours, and it was really very enjoyable. So I want to thank him very much. It was a real nice mitzvah that he did. I'm not going to disclose who you are. But you know who I'm talking about.
You are.
There are some people that brought some things today. And some plates, cups, all kinds of things. And I'd like to thank them for being so generous and kind and thinking about the class and thinking about being a giver and participating in this class the way that they do. All of you. It's wonderful. And I have a lot of gratitude towards all of you that have this class in mind. So thank you for that. We're going to be davening Marv a couple of minutes after the class. So would you be so kind as to stick around? Make sure there's a minion here for those who are davening. This class is going to be sponsored. And the Moshe will mention who the class is being sponsored by. I think I'd like to wish everybody a good Erev Shabbos and a good Shabbos. So, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you for having the dinner. Okay, the class is being sponsored by Dr. Goldstein in memory of his father, Gedalia Ben Vilper. It should be his first thing. Your Yurtzeit is this week or this week? Last Thursday is the Yurtzeit. Okay. And it's one of the famous questions. I've discussed it. Also, I want to welcome back Dr. Perlmutter. And we hope to see him very often in the class.
Yes.
We offer words of consolation. We all miss Mrs. Perlmutter, and it's a loss that we will feel for as long as this class continues. We wish him that he should see only simchas from his family from here on.
Amen. Thanks for emotion. No.
This actually, some of what I said here, I had mentioned with what's the Rabbi Berger. Some Some of what I mentioned, what I'm going to mention tonight, I had mentioned I was at Park Plaza. I give there a shower once a week, so I mentioned some of what I'm going to mention tonight. One of the questions that I were asked, and I mentioned that I personally would not be troubled by this question, but the Chassam Sofer and many after the Chassam Sofer, including my uncle, are somewhat intrigued. I shouldn't say troubled, but intrigued by why Parshas Vayeshev usually comes right before Hanukkah. Now, I'll explain to you why I'm not troubled by it. The reason I'm not troubled by it is because the Sedras were instituted by Ezra HaSofer, which predates Hanukkah. So, it's obvious it's not because of Hanukkah that Parshas Vayeshev comes beforehand. But there is a belief that many have. My sense is that my father had that belief clearly from the fact that my uncle asked the question. He had that belief also. And I know it's one of the Yesodos in Lubavitch that any event that happens is somehow related to the Seder of the week. So that means if something happens today, there is some connection between the event that happened today and the Seder of the week. So if we assume that, then the question remains a valid question. In other words, what is the connection between Parshas Vayeshev and Hanukkah? And for that matter, Parshas Miketz and Parshas Vayigash, these are all connected. Well, 1 week before Hanukkah, one the Shabbos before Hanukkah, one the Shabbos of Hanukkah, and the third one, you have Hanukkah in the week preceding that Sedra. So we have three Sedras that are connected. Now, one answer, I think, Rashi tells us, Vayeshev Yaakov Beretz Megurei Ovid Beretz Canaan. Yaakov resided in the land where his father and his father sojournings. There's a difference between Vayeshev and Vayogar. Vayeshev means to reside with roots. Vayogar comes from the word ger. Ger comes from the word gargir, which is a seed. A seed is something that doesn't have roots. So there was a difference between Yaakov's attitude towards his residency in Eretz Yisrael versus Yitzchak's attitude to his residency in Eretz Yisrael. And that is, Yaakov felt that he finally had roots. In a certain sense, my uncle explained it, that Yaakov felt that, you know, Avraham Avinu was told, Tigeh yieh zarecha beretz halohem, v'avodum v'inu osam arba me'oshana. So Yaakov felt that the period, now how that comes to 400 years, that can be worked out. Because the truth is, the Jewish people were only in Egypt 210. So the question is, how do you get 400 years? There are all kinds of ways of working it out. But Yaakov felt, listen, till that time, they had to deal with Yishmael. They had to deal with the wars of the Malachim, the kings. They had to deal with Mitzrayim in the time of Avram. They had to deal.
They had a deal with Lavan. They had a deal with Esav.
Avimelech.
There were so many times of crisis that he felt that him and his ancestors had already gone through, to a large degree, the years of suffering that was necessary before the Jews became permanent residents in Eretz Israel. And at this point, he said, the Torah says, Vayeshev Yaakov. Yaakov thinks, I finally got to that point where I could be at rest. And then the Torah says, Vayeshev Yaakov, Beretz Meguriah, Beretz Canaan. So Yitzchak realized that he didn't get to that point. But not only that, I think Yitzchak realized, my father would always say that Avraham Avinu would say, and my uncle also would say, Yer v'soshav anochi imachem. I am a sojourner, a person without roots, and I'm also a person who has roots. Every human being, my father would say, is both a ger and a toshav. This was just after John Kennedy was assassinated. I'm dating myself. So after John Kennedy was assassinated, my father would say, who had more security than John Kennedy? Who had more security? You had Secret Service all around him. All these shuls today, they have guards around them and all kinds of others. Some of these places that had guards, the guards were the first one killed. I'm not trying to discourage anybody. Anyway, so there is no real security. There is no real security. Every human being, even the greatest Toshav, the one who is most secure, is also a gear, is a gargir, a person who is insecure. And that's what Yitzchak realized. Yitzchak realized, and I think, if I'm to say what I think is the mistake with the Peace Now movement and all of that, I think that the idea of Ger V'Toshav they don't understand properly. In other words, we all want to be at rest. We all want to be a Toshav. We all want to reach that point where we could take a rest and lay back. But until the time of Mashiach, that's not going to happen. What is the idea of the Peace Now movement? The Peace Now movement, it has a very noble idea. How many more Jews have to be killed? How much longer do we have to suffer? How much longer do we have to be on guard every moment? It's something, and that concern could psychologists could earn a big living dealing with the pressures that come from those feelings of frustration. 70 years, and how many years beforehand? And how many years of exile, of pogroms, of Holocaust? We want to get to the point where we could be at rest. We want to be a toshav. A ger always has to be on guard. Lest an immigrant, you never know when they're going to come to send them on the other side of the border. But that's life. Life is, as much of a toshav as we become, we are still gerim. We are still gerim. And it's not just not just in the United States or in countries outside Eretz Israel. You know, today, we have it in the United States better than Jews had it perhaps anywhere else in Golis, in exile. But that could change also. Look at the radicals that are getting into Congress. I don't think that they'll have power to do much, but the little harm that they could do could be very harmful to us. So there is a concept, and what you notice is, you know, at one time these anti-Semites, they formed organizations that proclaimed hate, the Ku Klux Klan. It was easy to organize against the Ku Klux Klan because everybody recognized, everybody except its members, that the Ku Klux Klan is people that are, you know, against everything that America stands for. The American Nazi Party. Almost everybody recognized how dreadful of an organization that it is. But they have a new approach today. And that new approach is they don't work through organizations that are official hate organizations. They take over movements that are, on the contrary, identified with the spirit of the changing America. Let's say the feminist movement. I'm not getting into the issues of feminism now. So who are at the helm of the feminist movement? All of a sudden, the...
Anti-Israel.
Of course, I'm against the gay... personally, I'm against the gay movement for religious reasons. But in terms of the thinking of America today, it's even considered very noble. And when they go in the gay parade and they had Jewish gays marching, they were tossed out. It wasn't. On the contrary, they're not the hate organization. And what they're doing is turning the Jews into the hate organization. They are taking over organizations that advocate something else that has to do with the spirit of America today. And use those organizations for anti-Semitism and all kinds of hatred. But the organization is on the contrary. It's against hatred. And the result is that the Jewish organizations are perceived as being the hatred organization. So even in America today, you should know, we are Gerim. We are Toshavim, but we are Gerim. We're constantly facing challenges. Universities today are not allowing students to go to graduates because they refuse to write recommendations for people who want to do higher, to go to take advanced courses or do research in Israel. This is universities dedicated to education, dedicated to free speech and free research. When I say free, I don't mean you don't have to pay for it. But even in America today, we are gerim. And the truth of the matter is, the idea of ger is not so much that I don't have roots, as I don't have security. And roots contributes to security, and the lack of roots contributes to the lack of security.
And we are not completely secure. The attack, okay, it happened in churches also. But the attack in Pittsburgh, what did that show? It showed a lack of security. I'm not talking about security of guards with guns. I'm talking the Jewish people lacking security. This is the guy who did the shooting in the synagogue, what did he attribute it to? The fact that the synagogue was used for a rally for immigrants. Why? Are the Jews the only ones that support the immigrants? They use whatever, and even though that was hatred in itself, but they use organizations that advocate other issues as a cover for their anti-Semitism. So, especially, I'm somewhat troubled because he flip-flops on Israel. They're using the budget as a cover not to support Israel militarily. Senator Paul, whatever his name is. Rand Paul. He officially supports Israel, whether he does or doesn't, whether he follows his father's lead or not, but the final analysis is the same. They use other issues. Today, it isn't open anti-Semitism, but clandestine anti-Semitism. But it's still anti-Semitism.
Yes,
and so this is Vayeshev Yaakov Beretz Megurei Ovid Beretz Canaan. This represents the insecurity. But what was he was Vayeshev. Bikesh Yaakov Leishev B'Shalva. Yaakov wanted to be, he thought he reached the goal of peace, rest. He didn't have to worry anymore. Kofetz Halav Rosho Shel Yosef, the epithet of Yosef, overtook him. What is it? Sometimes we look at one thing, and because we look at one thing, we become distracted and not aware of other problems. Yaakov thought that the only problems possible was the problems from the outside. The problems with Esav. The problems with Lavan. Once those problems were solved, once Esav went to Eretz Seir, once he made a treaty with Lavan, that I won't go to your area and you won't go to my area, we didn't have to be on guard anymore. We could be at rest. We become Toshavim. Vayeshev Yaakov. We have roots. Kofetz Halav Rosho Shel Yosef. Sometimes we focus only on the problems at the border. And we have to focus on those problems. But sometimes we have to focus on the problems within the border also. And that was Yaakov's problem. Yaakov's problem was, he thought he was at rest already. Nothing to worry about. Everything is great. And he didn't understand, just because he's not fighting a war with Esav, because he's not fighting a war with Lavan, that everything will be smooth. And he didn't look at his own kids. The war, the civil war, that took place between him, between Yosef and the brothers. And what is Hanukkah? We know when we went to school, so we were told it was the Greeks. It was the Greeks that attacked us. And then when we got a little more sophisticated, they told us the Syrian Greeks. That became more popular as Syria waged war against Israel. Anyway, But the truth is, it's true. It was the Greek ideology. It was Syrian Greek soldiers that were called in later in. But the war started by the Hellenistic Jews. It was a war between the Hashmonaim and the Hellenistic Jews. Hanukkah was primarily a civil war. Parshas Vayeshev focus on internal conflict. And the story of Hanukkah. And I mentioned actually years ago I was talking with Daniel's father, Rabbi Gutstein, and I was dealing with a problem that bothered me for many, many years. The problem was, in fact, I think we had the discussion here right after the share once. The problem, it was either here at the JCC, I forgot. Anyway, the problem was, it's very strange. We say, one of the reasons given why the holiday is called Hanukkah, Chanu Chafhei, they rested on the 25th of Kislev. That's when the Jewish people acquired the temple, the Beis Hamikdash, and they redid the temple, and they lit the menorah, and they redid the Mizbeach, the altar, and all of that. We know that the war with the Greeks went on for another 50 years. How can you say Chanu Chafei? They rested on the 25th of Kislev. The war continued. What Chanu Chafei? And I suggested at that time that initially the main part of the war, there was Greek participation, Syrian Greek participation, but because the Greek Empire was divided in three parts after Alexander the Great died, and the Middle Eastern section was controlled by the Greeks in Syria. Antiochus wasn't in Athens. He was in Syria. So, I suggest that the reason why we say Chanu Chafei, we were to a large degree, the war with the Hellenistic Jews, the civil war. The war became primarily a war between the Jews and after Chafei, after the Beis Hamikdash was recaptured and taken care of, it became primarily a war between the Syrian Greeks and the Jewish army. But up till then, it was primarily a civil war between the Hellenists and the Jews who followed the tradition. So Chanu Chafei, we're at rest that the civil war was resolved. So Hanukkah represents the celebration in a sense of internal peace. And that's part of what Parshas Vayeshev is all about. That's one way we could understand it. The other way, I've mentioned this before, that we could understand it from the perspective of, and I mentioned this at the Park Plaza, ideally under laboratory conditions, the menorah has to be placed outside the door of the house. Why does it place outside the door of the house? So I mentioned, because the Rambam says, that doesn't ask that question, but the Rambam mentions a medrash that one of the worst decrees that the Jewish people suffered was a decree by the Greeks, or the Syrian Greeks, or the Hellenists, that they weren't allowed to have doors or locked doors on their house. The question is, why did the Greeks care whether they had doors in their house or locked doors? And the answer is, after they closed down the Beis HaMikdash, they closed down the religious institutions and everything, Jewish tradition continued because of the home. They wanted to make the Jews scared that a Greek officer could walk in at any time and see if they are practicing their religion, in which case that was a capital offense. So they made a Gzeira decree that the doors should not have locks on them. And so, in a sense, now, it seems to me that the home could use as a bastion for perpetuation of our tradition only if there's peace in the house. If there isn't peace in the house, it won't be that way. So that's the reason why, and Parshas Vayeshev, the next three sedras, talks about internal conflict between Yosef and his brothers and the restoration of peace in the home, eventual restoration of peace. So that's another connection between Parshas Vayeshev, in other words, that the home has to become a bastion for perpetuation of Jewish tradition. Now, I think there is a third possible explanation. My uncle, it's one, and I've mentioned this drasha, it's one of my uncles, I think, in other words, the drasha was attacked by many, but one of my uncle's nicest drashos. He asks, why is it that the brothers of Yosef felt so threatened by Yosef's dream? V'hinei anachnu malmim alumim, we're in the field, and we're making sheaves of grain and wheat, sheaves of wheat. What was it? And then my sheaf stood up and yours bowed down to my sheaf. What was it that bothered them so much? A dream is a dream. Okay, Yosef was a little bit of a pest. What was it that bothered them? My uncle said it was more than the personal thing. What it was that Yosef said, things are going to change. After all, for generations, for the most part, in the land of Israel, the Avraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov, they were shepherds. It's true, Yitzchak, when they went to the land of Avimelech, he did some planting. But that wasn't part of the major area of Eretz Yisrael. That was part of the additional lands. So for the most part, the patriarchs historically were shepherds. And this was the life that they felt secure in. They felt security. We feel secure when tomorrow is the same as today, and today is the same as yesterday. But when there are changes, there is a certain sense, there is a certain sense of insecurity. Because we don't know what's going to happen with the changing circumstances. We don't know what's going to happen when we go from one country to another country, when we go from one city to another city, when we go from one job to another job. We pretty know what the situation is in our present job, but we don't know how that's going to change. And the brothers, besides the economic issues, the brothers were concerned about the religious commitment, not just their religious commitment, but the religious commitment of their future generations. And they felt, hey, if the circumstances don't change, just like Avram remained committed,
just like Yitzhak remained committed, just like Yaakov remained committed, just like we remain committed, so our descendants will remain committed to our tradition also. But if the circumstances change, who knows? So they felt that the only way to secure commitment to tradition is to make sure that the circumstances do not change. And Yosef comes and says, hey, we have to prepare ourselves for a different set of circumstances. We have to be ready that we're going to be in a land where we're not going to be shepherds. We're going to be farmers. And we might not be in the land of Israel, which was a land at that time that was primarily used for people who had cattle. Things are going to change. We'll be in a country that's primarily for farming, like Egypt. And the brothers were scared, not just because of the economic conditions, the changing circumstances. And to a certain degree, I hate to say it, but there are those who are training their children. It's always good to be in a community that has strong Torah observance, that has strong Torah institutions. It's always good. But you never know. You can plan and plan and plan. But the ultimate judge is history. And history sometimes makes the circumstances change. Against our will. We might not have choices. So we have to plan for changing situations. Why is it that the Jews who came over from Europe to America, I remember I showed my father a picture of the Jews at Ellis Island. They were all wearing kapotes and this. And I showed the picture to my father. My father said to me, the next Shabbos they were all in the sweatshops working. Was it changing? The changing circumstances. We are not, certainly the Jews in Europe were not being prepared. Their educational system, the home, they were educating the home far better than the homes in America today. But they were not trained for changing circumstances. Their attitude was that their town was there yesterday, the town is there today, and the town is going to be there tomorrow. They had pogroms, but the Jewish people survived pogroms. It didn't dawn on them that there would be a Holocaust. It didn't dawn on them that even before the Holocaust, thousands upon thousands are going to leave, be forced to leave. They didn't train for these things. What was the instead of preparing for it, the one who to a certain degree prepared for it was the Chavetz Chaim. He wrote a guidebook that I'm sure no one used. How if you're going to go to another country or whatever it is, how to deal with the changing circumstances. But for the most part, we were not prepared for it. Read stories, read the novels, that the novels are sometimes more true than the biographies. Because when this person writes biographies, they want people to be seen in a certain light. When they write the novels, they're telling the truth. So, about the early generations that came, to America, the test that they had. You know, it's easy for us. We have day schools, we have all of this stuff. But the test that the Jews had who came to America to survive, and they weren't prepared for the changing circumstances. And that's what Yosef said. Yosef said, we have to be ready for changing circumstances. And that's why the brothers felt so threatened by Yosef. And it's interesting, when you take a look at Hanukkah, who are the Hashmonaim? Certainly the original Hashmonaim. The original Hashmonaim were outstanding individuals. They were the Kohanim Dolim. When I say Kohanim Dolim, not the political hacks that sometimes became the Kohanim Dolim. And the Kohen usually was not one who fought in the wars. The Kohanim generally did not fight in the wars. But the Mokum Sheinish, where there's no one around, no one ready to seize leadership, Mishtatin Liyosish. So the Hashmonaim, the Kohanim weren't, and it's interesting, and I'll get back to this Rambam a little later. The Rambam says that one of the miracles of Hanukkah, one of the reasons we celebrate, the Hamidu Melech Min HaKohanim, they appointed a king from the Kohanim. Now the truth of the matter is, if you look in the Sefer HaChashmonaim, which is of dubious trustworthiness, but it says there that when they appointed Yehuda as the king, so they stipulated, first of all, they didn't call him king. They called him Nasi. And they stipulated until a Navi comes to appoint somebody from Shevet Yehuda. Because technically, the king of Israel had to be from Shevet Yehuda. The Ramban finds fault with the Hashmonaim for seizing the kingship. Because he says only Shevet, Lo Yosor Shevet Mi Yehuda. Only Shevet Yehuda could be the kings. And he says that's why ultimately the descendants of the Hashmonaim were killed out, except those that became Avadim, who were Avadim, slaves. So, because of that. But the Rambam seems to say that they acted properly. The Rambam seems to say that's one of the things we're celebrating. The Hamidu Melech Min HaKohanim, they established a king from among the Kohanim. How are we to understand the Rambam? Well, Yosor Shevet Me Yehuda. But my uncle writes in one place, because at that time, they simply couldn't, only the Hashmonaim had, that people could be sure at that time, would run the Jewish government in accordance with the Torah. So, there was a necessity change, and halachically, what the halachic basis for that is, but in other words, the circumstances required special action at the time. Required special action at the time. And more than that, there was a change. Part of the reason, I think, there was a change of environment that took place among the Jewish people at that time. And most of the Jews, because of the changing environment, they succumbed to the temptations that the changing environment made for them. And the Hashmonaim, with their victory, said, hey, we can overcome these temptations. So, and this was Yosef. Yosef was a person who first he was part of Yaakov's family. He wasn't in a Jewish environment. You can call it Lakewood B'nai Brak of our day. Okay. Okay. And then he's taken, and he had every reason to be resentful against members of his family. He's taken to Egypt, and he's sold as a slave. And then he becomes a prisoner. And then becomes Mishnah LaMelech. Becomes the assistant to the king. Huh?
Vizier,
okay, whatever it is. Anyway, so he becomes the assistant of the king and the ruler of Egypt. He becomes an Av Leparo and an Adon LeMitzrayim is the words that he uses. So that he's a master of Egypt. But in all these different areas, he remains committed to his tradition. The Medrash says that when he's about to sin, and I'll get into that in a little bit more, when he's about to sin, the muse Jokno of his father stood before him. What does that mean? That means the image of his father was there. His father was in Canaan. He could have been dead for all he knew. But his tradition was still alive. And he saw himself as a continuation of that tradition. If you ask me, I just want to mention, this is just a side point, I've mentioned it before, but to me it's very, very disturbing. When I first became a rabbi of a shul, not talking about Smicha, came around with shuls about 35 years ago, whatever it is. And at that time, whenever they said Yisker, especially Yom Kippur, the shul was packed with people. Now, you have a couple extra people, and I'm telling you, Yom Kippur, after Yisker, it was like a race getting out of the shul. I could stand at the doorway. I know one rabbi who got fired because this was Motzei Yom Kippur. He got up and made some announcements, and he said afterwards, "I hope to see you back next year." So anyway, but. Anyway, now comes Yom Kippur. You have a couple extra people who come in for Yisker. People who don't show up, the rest of the year, that come. But you don't have that group. What does that mean? Now, those who came then weren't observant either. That came for Yisker. But there was this idea of attachment to former generations. Today we don't have that. We don't even have that. We might have people more religious than they were, but you don't have that idea among the less religious of attachment to former generations. And this is a problem. That we're facing in America today. And it's only just in the last couple of years. The last couple of years have made a big difference. And that's going to, the way it looks, it's going to get worse. But so Yosef, of course, Yosef was fully committed. And every role he took, and he didn't feel that he can only serve God in one role if situations manipulated that he'd be in a different role. You know, I know of people that they occupied religious positions, be it rabbi, teachers, whatever it is, and they were they would advocate the most right-wing things, but when situations force them to take another position, and there's nothing wrong with taking that other position, all of a sudden their whole philosophy of life, their whole philosophy of life changed. There has to be a focus. I might have preferences for one type of position. I can have preferences for one type of environment, but I will not have control over what position I will have, what job I will have, what environment I'll have. But the one thing I have to maintain control is my commitment to God, irregardless. And that was the Chashmonaim. The Chashmonaim were ready to assume another position for the importance of the Jewish people, for the commitment of the Jewish people, the early generations of the Chashmonaim. The later generations, unfortunately, that wasn't true. And this was Yosef also. Now, I think there's one other thing. I know it might be a little late. At the end of Parshas Vayeshev, the Yerushalmi Imsochem discusses the question why we have four cups of wine. Why we have four cups of wine on Pesach. Four cups. So we know the Arba Lashana Skula, all kinds of reasons. Yerushalmi mentions an additional reason. He says, when the Sar HaMashkev, the bartender, or whatever you want to call them, the minister of drinking, I don't know, like drinking, I guess, was very... the minister, it was a big position in Egypt, being the Sar HaMashkev. Okay. So the Sar HaMashkim told his dream over to Joseph. So he mentions the kos paro biyadi, the cup of paro is in my hand. That's twice. A third time he says he puts the cup in the palm of paro. That's the third time. And then when Yosef explains the dream, interprets the dream, he also says cup, he talks about the kos paro, the cup of paro. So four times it mentions the cup of paro. The cup of paro, the cup, which is talking about the cup of paro. So the four times four cups we drink correspond with the four references in the Torah to the cup of paro, how we understand it. Very strange. Paro was our oppressor, Pesach. And here we drink four cups. We drink four cups we drink four cups that correspond with the four cups that Paro drank. But, you know, it's interesting. Pesach, there's a custom. And Lubavitchers don't have that custom. But many people have the custom that somebody else pours the wine in the cup. You don't pour your own cup wine. I pour my own cup. I'm scared that people are going to spill. Anyway, so the question is, what's the reason for the four cups? What cups? Kairos, freedom. And here we take the cup of Paro, who was our oppressor. Okay, it was Yosef, but the successors are identified. All are identified as Paros. So we should drink the cups of Paro, corresponding to Paro, because Paro drank four cups. We drank four cups. But what we have to show, because even when we go free, we can remain slaves. And that was the problem with the Jewish people in the desert. In other words, constantly saying, I'm going to go back to Egypt. They couldn't see themselves as not being slaves of Paro. So a person has to see, we have to see the Jewish people as being our rulers. Not unconsciously, the others being our rulers. The Rambam says, when he discusses, what is the significance of Hanukkah? The Hamidu Melech Min HaKohanim, V'chazra malchus l'Yisrael k'masayim shana, like 200 years, the rulership and was returned to the Jewish people for a period of 200 years. And now it's important to, this is very important. You know, many people, when they talk against the state of Israel, it's not, there's no question there were rulers, and there are rulers that are against tradition, but we still have to recognize the gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us with having Jewish rulers. 200 years, he says, he doesn't say that the first king, the Hashmonaim, but the two, he says, we are celebrating the fact that rulership was returned for 200 years. You know, during those 200 years, some of those kings were pretty bad. Were pretty bad. Were this? What worse could there be? But at least they were identified as Jews. At least they've identified as Jews. The control of the Jewish people, that we are in control of ourselves, that we are our own rulers in our own country. I'm not talking. We can't expect, if we're in America, that we need... Ivanka's a very fine person, and if she comes president, that'd be very nice. But okay, that's a separate issue. But the Eretz Yisrael was the Syrian Greeks that were really in charge, and it's important the Chazra Malchus LeYisrael, so what we're saying, when we take the cups symbolizes the Malchus. Paro is no longer our king. It's our cups now. We replace Paro. Paro no longer is our masters. We are our own masters. The Jewish people, and that's what Pesach is. Pesach is Goy Mikarev Goy, that we became our own masters. And that has to be our attitude. There are those today that want to make Eretz Yisrael not a Jewish state anymore, whatever it is, then the ultimate thing that will happen to them, the ultimate thing that will happen with that is it won't be Jews ruling over Jews. Eretz Yisrael has to remain a Jewish state. It has to, the Chazra Malchus LeYisrael, the Malchus has to return to the Jewish people. And that's the four kosos that we have on Pesach.
Thank you. I'd like to once again thank Young Israel for their generosity in allowing us to have this class. We're going to be davening Marav in about 2 minutes. And I'd like to wish everybody a good Erev Shabbos, a good Shabbos, and a Freilich HaKhanukah.